Can any mother help me? I live a very lonely life as I have no near neighbours. I can't afford to buy a wireless. I adore reading, but with no library, I'm very limited with books. I get so down and depressed after the children are in bed and I'm alone in the house. I sew, I read, and I write stories galore, but in spite of good resolutions and the engaging company of cat and dog, I do brood. I've had a rotten time and been cruelly hurt, both physically and mentally, but I know it's bad to brood and breed hard thoughts and resentments. Can any reader suggest an occupation that will intrigue me and exclude thinking and cost nothing? A hard problem, I admit. Now, that's a letter that appeared in the British motherhood magazine Nursery World from a reader in Ballingate in Ireland in 1935, and it prompted a flood of responses at the time that eventually led to the setting up of a very unusual secret society that ran for over 50 years. The opening line also gave Jenna Bailey the title of her book on the subject. And when I spoke to her yesterday, I asked her how she first found out about what became known as the Cooperative Correspondence Club.
I was doing my master's degree at the University of Sussex in life history, and I was just looking for a topic for my thesis. And I happened to hear someone mention an unusual collection of women's writing that they had in the mass observation archive at the university. And I just took a look and I loved it, and it sort of went from there. I worked on it for my thesis and then I turned it into a book.
So what did you find when you looked first?
What I found was is quite a mix of papers because basically there was writing from a lot of the contributors, the separate women that were in the club. And what's in the archive now is just pieces of what existed from the magazine over the 54 years. I think we have only about 10% of what they actually wrote. So what we have is sort of spotlights and just bits of their stories and of their lives, of the group of these women that made up this club.
So what interested you about these letters?
I think they're exceptionally well written, for starters, and also just the women are just amazing. I mean, the different characters. There's some women that are so funny and so interesting, and you can just really get into their lives and really get into the moment. I mean, I feel like even though it's quite a historical book and it says a lot about Britain in these decades, it also is timeless, and you just feel like in those moments with those people, and it's just wonderful stories, wonderful writing.
And none of them used their real names. They all adopted these names. Even the letter, as you say, from the woman in Ireland was signed Ubique, which is the Latin word for everywhere. So it kind of suggested that she wasn't the only person going through what she was going through. But in doing that, in using a pseudonym, there's a kind of cleverness there too. It's not just simply a woman writing from her own perspective.
There's definitely a cleverness. I think the pseudonyms have several different meanings. The one, it was quite fun for the women to pick something and to sort of pick a persona. And also, definitely when they first started, it was a way to, you know, kind of like you say, create the way you want to present yourself within the group, because they were all strangers when they started writing, so they could choose how the women saw them, particularly through their pseudonyms. And I think a couple of the women did have a different writing persona than their personality. I think over the years, eventually, you couldn't hide yourself through a name, but I think in the beginning, it was important to them.
So at the time that this woman from Ireland wrote in 1935, there was no correspondence club. She was just writing a letter in despair, really, to a magazine. She didn't realise what she was going to start.
I'm sure Ubique had no idea what would unfold from her letter to Nursery World. It was really just a cry for help. And as you see over the next couple of editions of Nursery World, what happened was women slowly started trickling in, writing back, saying that they felt the same way as she did. And really they suggested just to correspond one-on-one with her, but so many women did this and so many women were in the same situation that that's how they had to come up with a group letter writing format. So it's a correspondence magazine, which means it's a private magazine. And so the only people that are allowed to read the magazine are the people that belong to the club. So the way it worked was that each woman, there was about 24 in the group, wrote an article for each edition of the magazine, mailed it to the editor. The editor compiled the articles and bound them together and hand-stitched them in a linen cover. And she would stitch some artwork on the linen cover as well. So they were quite beautiful. But there was only one copy of each edition. So the editor mailed it to the first woman on a prearranged list. And she would read it and write comments directly on it. So the text kind of grew as it went from woman to woman. And so they mailed it along the group until everyone had received it. And they did this twice a month for 54 years.
So they weren't published
No, they weren't published. It's not a magazine as the average person imagines. They're not glossy. You know, they're handwritten letters. I mean, articles, but that look like letters to a group. And as I said, stitched together in a linen cover. So they're quite delicate.
What were the stories that struck you when you read them?
There's quite a range of things. I guess what struck me in the beginning is the fierceness of the articles. Like, they really, during the war, there were two women that were wives of conscientious objectors, and there were a lot of soldiers' wives. So there's a lot of political debate during the war years, which were really interesting. And it was kind of no holds barred. I mean, the women were really very straightforward and very cutting and always catching and challenging each other intellectually. But I think probably I'm more inclined to enjoy the more personal articles myself, and a lot of really emotional things. One woman's husband who was quite sick with cancer, and he ended up dying of cancer. And those letters are just so emotive and emotional, and you really feel in that moment. And also there's several really funny stories. I mean, just the range of personalities is so diverse that the range of articles is wide-ranging, and there's everything. There's humor, there's sadness, there's loss, and there's a lot of suffering as well, because this was a place for the women to unburden themselves, because these were people that they didn't see on a daily basis, and so they felt they could be really open there.
And you have stories ranging from, I think it was Roberta who told the tale of the German bomber that kind of crashed out of the sky just beside their house as they're sitting out in the lawn drinking lemonade.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you have someone, I think she was called Isis, who wrote the story of her son who was born with Down syndrome.
Yeah, and she suffered a lot from depression after that and ended up falling in love with the doctor, because he was sort of someone that was really kind and really took care of her in a difficult time when her husband wasn't really there for her in that time. And I think that's one of the most poignant pieces in the book, the story of her and her struggle in those years, and I as well the story about Roberta and the death of the bomber in the village is very heartfelt and very touching.
It's a slice of social history. What do you think it says about people's lives in the second half of the 20th century?
I'm not so sure about people's lives, but about women's lives. I guess really for me what it was about how much of a surprise it was, the things that the women were doing in those years, which was unexpected to me. I mean, the way that they were talking about things like sex and birth control was not what I had expected. And sort of just the, I guess what I also found interesting was that these people's hopes and dreams were really the hopes and dreams of any generation, even though it is quite a historical piece about and learning, seeing how Britain sort of evolved in those years, but also seeing how these women are the same as women today, really, within that historical context.
But there was quite a cross-section of society.
Yeah, there was quite a cross-section of society. There was quite a range across the middle class, and there were several members who had grown up in working-class families and were now considering themselves middle class. And there was one woman that was still working class. That was, her pseudonym was Cotton Goods. And there was quite a diversity in other things. I mean, they particularly specifically recruited a Jewish woman in 1938 to bring in a sort of Jewish perspective. And the reason they did all of this, they wanted a diverse group, was because the magazine was supposed to add something more to their life, to be able to learn about different people and different places, and just to inspire them intellectually as well. So they really wanted a wide range of people to help contribute and have more interesting articles.
And then you came along at the end of the story almost, but you met some of the women.
There's five of them still alive, and I know four of them quite well. I guess the one I know the best is Rose, and she's Electra in the book. And she just had her 101st birthday 2 weeks ago. And she's just amazing. I mean, she's so bright and intelligent and interesting, and had so many stories to tell me about the CCC and her friends in the magazine. And the other women as well are just exceptional, really bright and really different personalities, but very interesting women.
And what do they say that it brought to their lives?
A lot of friendship. I guess particularly Kitty is one of the women that's still alive, and she was a mother of seven with a husband who worked really hard but wasn't around a lot and wasn't much of an emotional support, and she lived in a really isolated area. And I know for her it was huge source of support and friendship and just really conversation, because she found that she wasn't around adults at all and didn't really have anyone to speak with. And she also, she called it an intellectual coffee morning for her, and she just felt relief, she said, when it arrived in the post, because it was just something, a break from her every day.
Do they feel sad or nostalgic in any way that mothers nowadays don't have or don't use something like this to talk about their problems in the 21st century?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard from them specifically, but I guess I would say that mothers do sort of have things like that. I mean, what I hear more anyways is that people compare something like the CCC to Mumsnet, which is an online thing where women go to communicate and get support. And I've spoken with a lot of other mothers as a result of this project, and I just think that exists, but just in a different form now.
The book is published now. It's called Can Any Mother Help Me? And in a sense, that's kind of the end of the story. But I was intrigued that the woman who started this all off, Ubique, the woman from Ballingate in Ireland who wrote the letter in 1935 that kind of kick-started this whole movement, has never been identified.
Yeah, that's because she actually had to drop out of the magazine during the war because there was problems with sending it in the post because of censorship, and I guess the delays were too long to send them. This is what the women have told me anyway. Sending them to her took too long, so in the end she had to leave the club. So unfortunately, I don't know the end of her story, or I only know a really small bit of it, and I don't know if in the end she got enough out of it over the first few years that she was in it that she didn't need it after that. And I don't know her story, and I don't know where her family is. So if anyone out there knows, I'd love to be contacted and to hear about her.
So the mystery kind of continues. If anybody knows where Ballingate is in Ireland, because I must say I've never heard of it. If anybody knows where Ballingate is or knows who that person might be who started this all off by writing the letter back in 1935, you can contact us here on the programme. Chances are slim, but you never know. The book is called Can Any Mother Help Me? 50 Years of Friendship Through a Secret Magazine. It's written by Jenna Bailey and published by Faber and Faber. We'll join